Hey there, and welcome to episode number 27 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. And welcome to 2018. I hope you all had a great Christmas and a new year. Now, in this episode, I talk to Ron Bumblefoot Fole. So a lot of you might know him from his time in Guns N' Roses, but he has also done a lot of other things, including releasing 10 solo albums and played with various artists and also wrote songs for TV shows, games, football teams, everything. He's done it all. And also, I'd like to thank Ron for giving me permission to use one of his songs for the opening of my podcast. The song is called Little Brother Is Watching from his album that was released in 2015. And actually, throughout this podcast, you'll hear a lot of songs that are from the album Little Brother Is Watching. Yeah, so make sure you check out all his albums. He's got some really interesting stuff. And also his new band called Sons of Apollo. Now, being the start of the new year, I'm also going to give away a free one-year subscription to one listener. So all you have to do is send me an email, which is in the notes, at roach1@hotmail.com, and just write in the title, one free membership. And then what I'll do is, in my next podcast, which will be next Wednesday, I will announce the winner, and then that person will win the free membership for a lifetime on my close Facebook group, Become a Guitarist Today. I start off the interview by asking Ron how he first got started with his recording when he was only 6 years old.
We would do demos down there. I figured out a multi-track system using cassette recorders where there'd be the cassette recorder in one corner of the room, the drums in the other, so there was some distance. We would have our little acoustic guitars that we would play just a foot away from the tape recorder, and then we would play that back facing just 2 inches away from another one that's recording, and we would put our faces next to it and we would sing, and that's how we overdubbed vocals onto the next cassette recorder. Wow. And we made demos, we wrote songs, we did it all. We did shows in the backyard, the basement, the school across the street. We sold tickets. We made cups of confetti to throw in the air at the end of the show. I would make merch just by making little comic books that I would hand draw, and they looked like a 5-year-old made them, or a 6-year-old, 7-year-old. But that's what we were doing, just using whatever was in arm's reach that we could get creative with and work with. And we did it. And in my case, I never stopped.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, especially that the way you figured out with those recordings, it's for a 6-year-old, you know, that's incredible.
You know, the one thing I realize is that at that age, your mind isn't developed to shoot yourself down and say, no, I can't do that. I don't have this. I don't have that. This isn't possible, or any of that. Yep. You just use what's around you and you figure it out.
So your brother plays drums as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Is he older or younger?
He's 2.5 years older.
And so you guys grew up playing together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
How'd you find it with your rhythm-wise? Did you find it really helpful growing up with a drummer?
Between having a band, a live band to play to and lock in with, and doing all the academic studies of reading and being strict with a metronome, all that stuff helped, definitely.
Yeah. Did you go to teachers as well?
Yeah, I took one-on-one study for about 8 years and did reading and music theory and got into jazz and classical and all of that stuff.
And had you fun?
That was going on, I would work on my own, just learning songs by ear, doing a lot of ear training kind of stuff just on my own listening. I would do things when I was a young teenager where every day I would try and learn an entire album just by ear.
Oh, really?
And I would drop the needle and I would start playing along and figuring it out by listening. And by the end of the song, I would have the parts down and go on to the next song and do that to whatever was at hand. A Van Halen album, a Scorpions album, an AC/DC album, Judas Priest album.
Wow. And that was the days before YouTube or anything.
Oh, long before. We're talking back when those albums were just coming out.
Yeah. So after then, so you did your original band. Oh, sorry, your original CDs when you first started.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, what, 95, your first album?
Well, I started doing comp CDs for different guitar labels. I would have a song on them. There was Ominous Guitarist from the Unknown in 91 or 92. And then there was Guitar on the Edge 2, 3, and 4 in the next years. And then my first record deal, when I had my first full-length album, that was 1995 on Shrapnel Records in the U.S., Roadrunner in Europe and Japan. Yeah, that was May 1995. The Adventures of Bumblefoot was the album.
Yeah, because I remember hearing that album. A friend of mine brought it over, probably just after that. Like, this guy who was really, you know, he got all the things that was coming out from America over here straight away, and he played me the album and thought, wow, this is very different, you know. It was great.
Cool.
Yeah, so from then you've done a lot of other, you know, like you had, what, 10 solo albums you've done?
I've done a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of producing, a lot of collaborating, a lot of guest stuff.
Yep.
Done things that I didn't put out myself, where it was just for a publishing library to be used for TV and film and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think last time I checked my ASCAP, it's definitely like somewhere in the 300s as far as how many songs are registered.
Yeah. So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I saw you done a lot of like the TV shows, like the themes and everything like that as well.
Yeah. Did a lot of stuff for MTV and VH1, a lot of those TV shows.
Yeah.
Music for the Osbournes and all kinds of stuff. I think the most popular one ended up being, it was the theme song to a show on VH1 called That Metal Show.
Yep. So really someone all over the world probably would have heard you're playing somewhere on a TV show or somewhere.
You know, it surprises me sometimes. I remember watching TV. I was watching the show So You Think You Can Dance. And suddenly I heard like 10 seconds of my music.
Oh, really?
One of the little spots in between scenes.
Oh, well.
Like, what the hell? Yeah. It's been on Oprah Winfrey. It's been on Tom Brokaw. It's been on WWE, SmackDown and Raw, a lot of wrestling stuff. Been on Major League Baseball. It's been on NFL. I did all the music for the 2008-2009 season of the New York Islanders hockey team that they were using for all their promos and everything. So a lot of people have heard my music and just didn't know it was mine.
Yeah. Do you know if it's been in UFC at all, like any walk-ins UFC?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I got to check. I have to go back and check the lists and lists of stuff, but I'm pretty sure that UFC has used some stuff.
Yeah. So with your, if someone wanted to use like a part of your song for like the podcast or something, so how would you go about that?
Well, if it's the stuff that was on Shrapnel Records, that I can give rights to. But once I got off of Shrapnel, I learned a lot about what I wanted and didn't want business-wise. So from at that point, I started my own label and made sure I always owned the publishing as far as the writer and the administrative share, so that all I have to do is just say yes.
Okay.
And anyone can use it. So I own the master recordings. I own everything, because I learned, like, nothing sucks more than having music out that no one can get and no one can use and you can't do anything with, and you don't have the power to do anything at all.
Yeah.
So at that point, I made sure that I was never in that position again.
Yep. Yeah. I know the song was, it was Q Fever on your first album.
Q Fever.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah,
like,
that,
Just a little
That
intro
one I
part.
can't do anything with. But for example, there's a podcast that's all about supernatural, paranormal, UFO, all kinds of things like that. And every podcast they do, they use songs of mine. And all I did is just said yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, use them.
Oh, excellent.
So for all the rest of my music, anybody can do anything.
Yep.
And it's important to have that control over your music.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be able to say yes or no. You don't want someone else always saying no, and no one gets to hear your music. No one can own your music. No one can do anything with your music. No one can include your music in what they're doing. It's dead.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. And all that's right. The beautiful thing, because I own the master recordings. I own the songwriting, you know, all the publishing, both halves of it, both shares, the writer's share and the publishing company share. So all you have to do is say, hey, can I use that? And all I have to do is say, sure.
Yep. Excellent. All right.
And it's important. It's very important for musicians to retain their rights for that reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. And to own their stuff. Yes, do we need again?
Now, so going back to your guitar, I'm really interested in your... Now, was that your design, the guitar with the fretless and the normal fretted?
You know, back when I was a teenager, I would do crazy things. Like I would pull the frets off the neck and I would fill it up with coins and shave them down and have this weird fretboard that does just, you know, just crazy stuff like that. But it was when I hooked up with Vigier Guitars, the French company, V-I-G-I-E-R,
yep.
in 97. Been with them 20 years. And I remember I went to a NAMM show in 98, and at the booth I saw this fretless guitar, and I was like, why didn't you tell me you make these? Like, nobody plays them. We've sold three of them in the last 18 years.
Yeah.
It's like, well, give me one. I will use it and I will make a lot of music with this thing. And they gave me one, and I started recording with it. In fact, one of the first things I recorded with it was what ended up being that metal show theme song.
Okay.
10 years after that. And it became a bigger and bigger part of my playing, to the point that I felt like I needed to have it all in one, where I didn't have to choose between fretted or fretless by putting on a fretted guitar or putting on a fretless guitar. I needed a double neck that had both.
Mm.
And they built it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So on the fretted part, the bottom one, does that have the dots on the top?
Both necks have on the side, on the edge of the neck, yep. little dots and lines so that
okay.
I know where I'm at.
Yeah. Yep.
Including the fretless neck.
Oh, okay.
It would be a lot tougher without
yeah.
that little guide there.
Oh, for sure.
It helps.
Because you don't actually have them on the frets, do you?
Yeah, on the fretboard, or I should say the fretless board,
yep.
you know, it's just a sheet of metal.
Yeah, yep.
There's no markings on there, but there's on the edge, there's little notches, these little things so that you have some sense of where
yeah.
you might be.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, otherwise it'd be very hard.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so when you're playing live and you go from one to the other, is it just one lead plugs into the guitar?
Oh, when I'm going from one to the other, there is a little three-way toggle switch that's the fretted neck, both necks, or the fretless neck. Mm. And as I switch my arm from one to the other, I have to quickly smack that toggle switch and
okay.
move it onto the other neck.
Ah, yes. I see what you mean. Yeah, because I can't remember what song, but I saw you playing. You went from one pretty much straight to the other. I thought, wow, how's that not ringing? Without, you know, feedbacking or anything while you're playing the other one. But that explains it all.
So it's very fast.
Yeah.
Hitting it down as you go to strum one or the other.
Yeah, well, I didn't even notice you're doing it. So, yeah, oh, that's good. And so you pretty much use that all the time now?
That's it. Yeah, that's my go-to everything guitar. It has everything I want to do. Yeah, I would feel like I'm missing something without it.
I really can't think of any other players, especially like rock players, you know, play fretless. It just adds a different dimension to the whole playing and the sound, really.
It's kind of like switching to a slide, only you have a slide on every fingertip. It's a very cool thing. It's almost like an electric cello in some ways, like a cello that you play like a guitar.
Now, I want to jump to December 2013 when you did the online education site with Jamplay, was it?
Ah, yes, yes.
Yeah. Do you still do that?
I just did the one round of like 24 lessons with them, and that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've thought about doing more, but I have too much going on.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I do. I'm looking to simplify life more and more.
Yeah, I mean, by the looks of it, you've got heaps going on. Is it free lessons or people download them, like paid lessons?
I believe it is a subscription to the site. And when you do that, you have access to everybody's stuff on the site.
Okay. So what type of things do you do in those ones? Or, I mean, do they tell you what to do, or you just say, okay, I'm going to talk about that?
No, I gave them a whole bunch of ideas of what I planned on doing. They were cool with everything.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was, I think, 3 or 4 songs that I did breakdowns of, where I played the song and then I would dissect all the parts.
Mm.
And then besides that, there were just a whole bunch of different lessons.
So you still do like Skype lessons now as well?
Rarely, maybe 1 or 2 a year, because I just can't schedule them. Too much running around.
Yeah.
I'm always on the road. I'm in like 10 countries a month, almost every month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This month I've just stuck to the US, although I got here from, where was I? Yeah, I was in Indonesia the first few days and came here. Now I've been running all around the country doing these one-man shows. It's sort of like a storyteller show, almost like a mix of... It's like a guitar clinic, but without the clinical stuff. And it's like an acoustic show, only with an electric. And it's a lot of fun. It's very personal. Just kind of sit on a chair with a microphone and just be silly and play and sing and interact with the audience. It's nice.
Yeah. So when you practice, do you practice on acoustic or electric?
It depends on what I'm working on.
Yep.
Like now we're going to have, or I should say, a full year of 2018 of Sons of Apollo touring.
Yep.
So I am practicing like crazy those songs, and I have to practice on the double neck because I have to make sure that I'm used to when I have a chance to switch to a pickup and when I have a chance to switch from one neck to the other and coordinate all of that with all the backing vocal parts while I'm playing everything. It's a whole circus going on. Like just between my arms and my head. So there's a lot of stuff to coordinate and get used to.
Yeah.
So mostly I've been playing now on the double neck practicing, but usually I'll just be sitting on the couch watching TV with an acoustic guitar in my hand, just playing along to whatever cartoons I'm watching or whatever's on.
Yeah.
And the wife will start laughing because I'm playing along to whatever commercial is on or anything like that. And she just starts laughing. She's like, how do you know this music? Like, how do you, and you can just anticipate or you just, what, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, what's coming up.
Yeah.
Now, I saw another clip of you with the Hello Kitty guitar. that was really cool, actually, going through all those different songs.
Yeah, and that was actually a half hour long.
Yep.
And did everything from Stevie Wonder to all kinds of stuff, and then they trimmed it down to like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But that was a half hour long.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. No, that was great. I mean, just the playing on that little guitar and even your vocals, too. Yeah, it was really good.
Cool, thank you. Yeah,
Excellent.
that was fun. They do a whole series. They had Mike Portnoy playing a Hello Kitty drum set. They had Zakk Wylde on that little Hello
Oh,
Kitty
really?
guitar. Tons of people, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's the first one I've seen. So on your Bumblefoot albums, do you do most of the vocals?
Yeah, do pretty much all the vocals except for some stuff about 15 years ago. I did one cover of Can't Take My Eyes Off of You from Frankie Valli, Four Seasons. And on that one, there was this guy in a punk band that sang the verses, and I
Okay.
sang the choruses. I had this rapper that I was producing in one song on the Uncool album called I Hate Me More Than I Love You.
Nice.
And he did a verse on that song. So once in a while, but other than that, yeah, I do all the singing.
Okay. Oh, excellent. And I guess you'll be singing a lot of backups in Sons of Apollo as well.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of backups in that stuff.
Yeah. So have you guys actually rehearsed yet? Or are you still just.
Oh, we're gonna be. Yeah, we're getting together at the end of January. We're gonna start rehearsing and get everything all just tightened up. And then we start in early February. We start with Cruise to the Edge music cruise with Yes and Thank You Scientists and all these great bands that are gonna be on that. And then after that, we just start off as soon as we get off the boat in Florida. We start doing shows going up the East Coast. And I know we have a lot of summer festivals in Europe that have been announced, and we're just going to keep filling the calendar.
That's a great album. I've listened to it a few times now. It's amazing.
Cool, thank
Just,
you.
yeah. The only thing that tricks me is, I don't know if anyone else gets this, but sometimes I listen and think, hang on, is that Ron or is that Derek?
You can't tell, yeah, because he runs his keyboards through a Marshall. It gets the tone of a guitar. So, like, people listen to Figaro's Horror, and that's all keyboards. And they'll be like, man, I love you played on that. It's like, wow, when I went bump and hit the chord in the beginning. It's like, that is all Derek. I always say Derek is the greatest guitarist on keyboards.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's amazing. So I can't wait to see you live so I can actually see. Oh yeah, you play that part. I mean, some parts, yeah, you can really tell, but others, it's like, wow, who is that? So you guys do a lot of harmony runs together?
Oh, we do, and a lot of unisons, a lot
Unison as
of,
well, yeah.
yeah, a lot of doubling up, and man, it's some crazy stuff.
Now, is there anything that you play where you have to sing backups, which is like really tricky?
Yeah, whole lots. Yeah, because a lot of times it's not so much that it's something technical that's happening finger-wise. It's just that you have two parts that are falling into different parts of the groove that don't necessarily flow with each other. So even let's say in the song, what's an example? God of the Sun. At the end of the verses, where I'm harmonizing with Jeff, and the guitar is going zoom pa pom pom pa pom, zo pa 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 pa, zo pa 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 pa. But while that's going, I have to be singing, I never know, boom pa pom. Something like that, while you have this thing going, do 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 do, boom 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 boom, and it's just dividing the brain to loosen up and relax and just flow with both of those, where you have to just sort of use the force and not think or see or feel or anything, and just let both things happen. So that there's a lot of moments in it, and it's those tiny moments that don't stand out that are pretty tough. Like let's say Signs of the Time, the solo sounds like it would be the toughest part of the song, but really the toughest part of the song is the very end of the last chorus, where I have a guitar part that's like accenting almost like dotted quarters, boom 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 boom, but then it does this triple thing, boom boom, going right into the final groove. But while that's going, I have to hold these harmonies, vocal, you know. And, you know, like belting that out while doing these things that are going into triplets and so stuff like that. Those moments are the toughest moments.
Yeah. And I thought our Pretty Woman was hard to play and sing. That sounds amazing. I look forward to hearing that. All of you guys sing, don't you? So Bill sings and Mike as well.
Yeah, Mike's got a voice. Billy's got a voice.
Yeah.
I haven't really heard Derek sing other than when he sent me videos of little parts. It's like, hey, I got this idea for the next record. And he plays me something, and if you like, sing something on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's going to be doing singing during the show. I mean, he's pretty busy. He's got like 8,000 keyboards around him. He pretty much has like a small town of keyboards.
Yeah. Do you think you ever come to Australia?
Oh, we better.
Yeah, I hope so.
See, that is all up to Australian promoters. Yeah. They have to want us and be willing to make an offer to the booking agent, who then, you know, checks it in with management and checks in with Mike, and we make sure that it fits the itinerary where we can make it happen and just get all the moving pieces and parts in place.
Mm.
But it all starts with the promoters there. Yeah. They have to want us.
Yep.
You know, any band can just show up, you know, at the airport with their guitars and say, we're here.
Yep.
But then what?
Yeah, that's right.
They need a place to play and gear and people to know about it. And so it's really, we're all at the mercy of the promoters, the fans and the bands and everybody.
Yep.
It's all on them.
Now, in October 2010, you had the, was it the Witchwood School of Rock? Were you performing with students?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I actually do a program on the holidays called the School of Rock Program, where I get the kids, you know, between like say 6 to 12, and they get together, you know, learn different songs. Like, you know, one time might be AC/DC songs or whatever songs. And at the end of the week, they perform them. So is that similar to that, or is this already an established thing?
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, just nurturing that passion and focus in kids and getting them to work together and do it.
Yep.
It's the greatest thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the Witchwood School of Rock, which is not there anymore, but there was something called the Bumblefoot Rock Project.
Oh, really?
Where it's pretty much the same kind of thing that was. And it's in the same town of Whitney in Oxford and in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes these young kids and they have bands and they make music videos and demos and they do shows and they just get better and better. I just posted about a week ago a bunch of the music videos that were made from this year. And there was one that's just so adorable. The band calls themselves the Flower Fighters.
Okay.
And it's these young girls age 7 and up. I think they might have been even 6 at the time, doing a cover of Best of You from the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They love the Foo Fighters. Yeah. So they did a Foo Fighters song, and it was just the cutest thing you will ever see.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get a lot out of it as well, just, you know, teaching them and seeing them come together at the end, put it all together.
Well, I should fly out there and visit the school.
Yeah, that'd be unreal. If you're ever in Australia, I'd love to have you over to, you know, that.
You know, everything is just one flight away.
Yeah.
Or two.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to like Indonesia and Thailand, we're not that far away. So just hop on over.
Yeah. No, I probably could. I know I'm going to be going in the next few months.
Okay, yeah. Growing distant from the sound. Now, just going back to guitar playing, would you have any tips for upcoming guitarists or just starting to learn?
Yes, I have 40 years of tips
Yeah.
that I have to now try and funnel into just one. Let me think.
Okay.
Tips. Well, always be on time. Let's start with that. Do not be late for your rehearsal, for anything in life. And when I say be on time, I mean be early. Being on time does not mean showing up at 2 o'clock when it's 2 o'clock. It means get there at 1:45 and you wait for 10 minutes or however long it is, but you never make anybody else wait.
Yeah.
That's just rude. And you might as well just send them a message as well and saying, I don't give a shit about you. You mean nothing to me. Your time is of no value to me. No, you always be on time. Number two, always be prepared. People are depending on you to know what you're doing and have it down, just like they put in the time to make sure that they do. So don't screw everybody by not being prepared. In fact, when you're prepared, that means be twice as prepared as you need to be. Don't only know your stuff, but know everyone else's stuff so that if you want to lock in with something that happens with the drums or add a harmony to a vocal line or whatever it is or whatever you're doing, know not just what you need to know, but what everyone around you that you're working with is doing. Be aware and be considerate of all of that music. So that's one. Be on time, be prepared as far as playing wise. Do not rush the beat ever. Pull back, stay behind, lag a little bit. You're better off being a little behind than a little in front. Nothing is worse than playing in front of the groove and pushing it and making it have this nervous, uncomfortable energy. You kill the song that way. You kill the vibe. Everyone feels bad when you do that. You want people to feel good. And the way to do that is to just pull back.
That's good.
So
Yeah.
I could keep on going. I could spend the next 3 hours with this kind of stuff and get into everything down to psychology, to philosophy, to quantum mechanics, to everything and apply it to how you live your life and with music being part of how you live your life and applying it to music.
Yeah, you know what I mean. How about for the more established players? I mean, I know you've got a lot on the go at the moment and traveling and everything else like that. So how important it is, do you think, for them to live a healthy life and keep up the practicing and
Oh God. Yeah. My grandmother used to always say, at least you have your health. And that didn't mean anything to me until my health was jeopardized. And then suddenly I knew exactly what she meant. Yes, health is everything. People are expecting you to be your best. They're depending on you to be at 100%. Don't be at 90% because you have a hangover or because whatever the reason, or because you're sluggish, because you're having a sugar crash, because you ate a bunch of crap and now your insulin is all messed up. Eat healthy, exercise, sleep 8 hours so that your brain is fully functional and your focus and your personality and your body and your immune system, everything is at its best. The only way you're going to have a healthy singing voice, the only way you're going to have everything, sleep. That is what does it. Nothing, all the tea in the world won't help your voice. Sleep. Devote 8 hours, one third of your time to being unconscious, subconscious, whatever you want to call it. But that is the time that your brain needs to repair itself and maintain itself and clean itself and reboot and do everything that it needs to do so that those other 16 hours are not wasted. So, 8 hours sleep whenever you can, especially on the road, is not always going to be that opportunity because some jerk is going to want to save $20 by denying you a night's sleep because he can fly you at 6 in the morning instead of 10 and save himself, a tiny little drop of money at the expense of your health and your sanity. And your performance.
For sure. No, I got know what you mean.
So, definitely, yeah. So, that's the thing. It's battle, however, you have to be the biggest asshole diva in the world and make sure that you get sleep because everyone will thank you. Because if you get sick on the road, everybody gets sick on the road. That's how it works. Because you're all on top of each other all the time. One person coughs, everyone's getting sick. So you don't only owe it to yourself, you don't only owe it to the audience and everyone that's invested in you. You owe it to your bandmates.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't get them sick. And the crew, especially the crew, because they're the ones who work the hardest. You know, you do your show on stage and you practice or whatever else you might do to make sure that everything is cool. But it's the crew that builds the planet that the band little crawlers, you know, crawl around on. It's the crew that makes the show happen. That's how I look at it. It's like they build the planet and we just crawl on it. So really just value and appreciate and respect and honor your crew, because they are the reason you have a show. I mean, the fans are and everyone else, but the reason you have a stage and gear and everything is working right, and they built it. They made it happen. They keep the machine running.
Yeah, just wanted to talk about how you're giving advice to people who are writing songs to, you know, try and do it a bit each day, which I thought was a really good advice for people, you know, writing their own songs so you don't become stale, I guess.
Writing songs. Try and write every day, whether you feel like it or not, just to stay in the practice of flowing and letting ideas out, so that you don't get used to being blocked, and it's habits. Habits is what keeps you going. So develop the habit of writing every day. It's something I don't do, but I should. And if I did, I would be writing like crazy and I would have a million more albums out. But that is the key to it. Definitely do it every day, even if you just write a riff, a melody, something, but write something every day. Definitely. And ignore fads and what's popular and trends and all that. There is just one of you in the universe, and there will never be another in all eternity. So express yourself. Leave your mark and be true to who you are. Whatever kind of music it is, whatever kind of sound you make, it is yours and only yours. And don't deny the world that.
That's good.
So just be, I wouldn't say don't forcibly be different. Just be original, be true, be honest, be who you are, and don't overthink it style-wise. You know, whatever makes you feel like you're saying what you want to say and the way you want to say it, that's how you do it.
So I really appreciate your time doing this with me.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
No, no problem.
Alrighty. Bye-bye. Bye.
So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with One Bumblefoot Thole. Please check out the links in the notes so you can find out where to go to find more information about Ron and his albums. Don't forget to check out my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com, to find out all about my other podcasts, including videos from the other guests I've had on. And if you'd like to ask any questions about any of my guests or anything about guitar, then please do so again on my email in the notes below, and I will be doing a few podcasts over the next couple of weeks where I get to answer some of the questions and hopefully help you out with any things you might have, and also some tips. So until next week, keep jamming.